This episode is sponsored by Caltrans. Caltrans is now hiring innovators, problem solvers, and creative thinkers to transform transportation across California. Join a team focused on safety and innovation with great benefits and room to grow. Apply now at caltranscareers.com.
Welcome to Critical Conversations in Transportation Planning, where we're bringing you a series of interviews with pioneers and industry leaders who are offering their insights into some of the most challenging issues facing our field. This podcast is produced by the American Planning Association's Transportation Planning Division. TPD connects planners working across all transportation modes to share innovation, foster collaboration, and advocate for sustainable mobility solutions.
I'm Divya Gandhi, a transportation planner and a member of the Transportation Planning Division's Board of Directors.
And I'm Dr. M. Hall, an urban planning consultant and member of the TPD Board of Directors. In this episode, we speak to Mike Pritchard of the York County Planning Commission.
We really enjoyed this conversation, so let's get right into it. Mike, do you want to get us started telling us about your role, all the projects you're involved with, the kind of work that you do, and you know what brings you here today?
Yeah, I am the assistant director at the York County Planning Commission. So we are a single county MPO, and we're also the county planning commission for York in Pennsylvania. We are north of Baltimore and west of Philadelphia. We have every kind of landscape in our county. So we've got the city of York that's about 40,000 people. We've got suburban development surrounding that. And we still have a lot of great agricultural and rural areas throughout the county as well. So my work has been in city planning for the city of York. And I've also served as a transportation planner since about 2011. My work for this conference that we're covering is about community in motion, which is our coordinated public transportation and human services plan.
Excellent. So Mike, you apply elements of design thinking and human-centered design in your approach to planning. Tell us what that means and why it's important for the work that you do.
Yeah, human-centered design is really about putting the people who are using a product or a service first, getting their input about whatever you're working on. So for us, working on public transportation and how seniors and people with disabilities get around, we started with about 20 interviews directly one-on-one with seniors and people with disabilities in our community. They didn't necessarily have to have a public transportation experience. We were interested in just learning how they get around the county. So human-centered design more broadly is about involving the people who you're planning for directly in the process, from your data gathering through your definition of different needs and objectives of a plan, and even into creating the solutions or strategies or projects that might come out of the plan.
So that's a not always the approach that's taken in gathering information for planning. And we chatted a little bit ahead of time to kind of explore this topic with you. And a concept that you brought up is the notion of empathy interviews. Mm-hmm. And you're really focusing on people's experiences, their underlying motivations for the choices that they make. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this approach plays out in the work that you guys are doing in York County?
Yeah, so empathy interviews are really just about having human conversations with people. I gave that characterization at our presentation earlier. And I don't know why that's so hard for us as planners.
Right.
I have some thoughts on why it is.
Yeah.
I mean, but it really removes, you know, the jargon from the conversation. We ask questions the way that normal people talk.
Yeah.
And it really allows us to dive in and understand people's motivations for why we see behavior in the transportation network, for instance. So why are people choosing to drive a car to get around, or why are they riding the bus, or however they choose to get around? And empathy interviews really allow us to kind of follow them down some rabbit holes that would otherwise not pop up in your typical data collection methodologies, like just a survey or even a focus group,
because
there's kind of too many people in the room.
Yeah. How do you train you? So who's doing the interviews? Are these planners doing the interviews? And then how do you train folks in this method?
Yeah. We had all internal staff doing that work. So we were a team of three planners that worked on this plan in particular. And I was lucky enough that I have a family member who is an expert in design thinking and teaches it to college students.
Oh, wow.
So she came in and gave us kind of a boot camp, a one-day briefing on design thinking overall and how to do empathy interviews. Mm-hmm. And then it's really just something that you have to kind of get in and do it yourself, mm-hmm. Not unlike podcasting, where the more you do it, the more experience you get.
Yeah.
And you kind of learn what is worth diving into, how to ask questions that are open-ended, that you're not just getting yes and no responses mm-hmm. to things, and how to pull up when you need to pull up and get back to whatever your outline of the topic is.
Right, yeah. Right. Can you think of a, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. Can you think of a specific example of the way, like, here's how we used to ask this question before, yeah. and here's how we have that conversation yeah. now?
Well, I think we're really good as planners at collecting data from the Census Bureau yeah. or even just census, you know, local census. So we can observe phenomenon. We can understand what is happening in a community, but we don't understand why
right.
that's happening very often. We can ask people about what they think their needs are, but we don't get that additional layer of their motivations that might help us create a product or a project that people aren't going to think of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we got into a lot of conversations about behavior shift.
Okay.
How do we get more people thinking about their transportation future? Mm-hmm. If they are in a position where they can't drive anymore, what does that look like? How do you have that conversation in the community more broadly before people are facing that reality?
Mm-hmm.
The previous coordinated plans that we did were good. They were very based on maps, demographic data. We got a lot of good recommendations out of that about where the buses should go.
Yeah.
What areas of the county to kind of target, but this additional framework, again, really let us get into those motivations and think about communications and public outreach around transportation for seniors and people with disabilities that we would not have gotten otherwise.
Yeah. Can you think of any, I've got one more follow-up question. This is interesting. Can you give us an example of one thing that changed as a result of your findings from the empathy interviews versus the quantitative data that you had before?
Yeah, we heard a lot about people feeling like they are a burden if they can't drive.
Wow.
Whether they're using the buses, the fixed route bus system or the paratransit system, or if they're just relying on friends and neighbors for mm-hmm. trips. In both cases, we heard, I don't want to be a burden. I don't, the transportation network, the transit network should be for people who need it. We heard that a lot. And we were talking to people who you would kind of traditionally think of as someone who needs the transit
right.
service, right?
Right.
That was not anything that we would have come up with had we not gone through this. So we're having conversations now with private philanthropic organizations in the county.
Interesting.
So the United Way has really zeroed in on transportation and housing as their two priorities for funding. And the United Way, our local community foundation, organizations like that, are helping us to explore other funding opportunities to have those more, I'll call them softer interventions or, mm-hmm. or strategies yeah. so that we can boost those conversations in the community.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're taking this information, sharing it back out, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. How do people feel being asked to share their stories or share their experiences?
It varies.
Yeah.
Some people were a little bit hesitant and not to share their stories, but to be tied to those quotes.
Uh-huh.
Some people
sure.
want to make sure that we're maintaining yeah. anonymity, obviously.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I had other people in empathy interviews that said they were saying some negative things about our transit agency, and they said, you can tell them that I said that.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
So it varied. It was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I had some questions this morning after our presentation. Folks came up to me and asked, why did we develop personas, which mm-hmm. are, you know, fictionalized sort of synthesis of the input that we got. So we talked about the need to maintain anonymity.
Right.
That was important for us. It's not important for every project. But it also helped us just synthesize. We had 20 interviews, mm-hmm. and we went down to 8 personas.
Got it.
Short of having 20 unique people in this plan that we were trying to plan for, it just helped us kind of, synthesize that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, the qualitative, quantitative approach.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that a little bit. Yeah. So then are you... I think we kind of covered that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think we're good on that. Yeah.
I can talk just a little bit about putting this together.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. That'd be great.
So, a common criticism, I think, is, you only talked to 20 people. There's half a million people in York County. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we sort of identified some of the demographics of the people we were speaking to, and we paired that with census data. So we can say... the persona that we named Richard, who is a senior who is using fixed route on a regular basis, we can tie that to census data and other demographic information to say Richard represents 2,000 people in our community based on his experience.
Wow.
Incredible.
Imagine shaping California's future, creating multimodal systems that connect people and strengthen communities. At Caltrans, transportation planners are leading the way with innovative solutions that keep California moving into the future. With great benefits, room to grow, and work that truly matters. Build your next career at Caltrans. Apply now at caltranscareers.com.
Mike, you also shared that your work spans, urban centers, suburban areas, county seats, and mm-hmm. some rural agricultural communities as well. So we were curious, what are some challenges and strategies that have emerged in ensuring that planning and transportation planning is truly inclusive across such different geographies?
We are really lucky in Pennsylvania that shared ride paratransit is available to everybody regardless of where you live and where you are going in the state. Mm-hmm. That's a program in Pennsylvania at the state level that is great. What we've done, though, is to try to think about what the different needs are for people in different landscapes. So at the urban level, you do have fixed route bus service, where maybe that's an option for you that with a 15-minute headway or a 30-minute headway, you're going to get where you need to go on the fixed route bus. Mm-hmm. In more rural areas, though, we are probably never going to have fixed route service. The density just isn't there for it. So we're exploring more informal sort of ride-sharing things among houses of worship or... just local groups, like your Rotaries, your Elks, your all of those kinds of social organizations, and the United Way in particular in York County is looking at ways to incentivize that for mm-hmm. For churches, synagogues, et cetera, to really try to get more people involved in that, mm-hmm.
Wow, thank you for focusing on, and really talking about the context-sensitive approach to planning that you're taking. So one thing that we were wondering about, you mentioned about coordinated plans and, funding. So, and considering all of, all the work that goes into empathy interviews and the kind of effort and the kind of time that takes, we were wondering, federally mandated coordinated plans and efforts like this require strong relationships with probably fellow transit agencies and also funding sources to actually be able to do the work. Mm-hmm. So what has been the key to successfully securing that kind of funding for, studies like the one that you've done, and how have you navigated partnerships to really having them support human-centered planning?
Yeah, we have a long tradition of working with our public transit agency in York. So we've been working on coordinated plans with them for decades. And I think we were at this point where the planning products were not getting the sort of results or recommendations that anyone really wanted. We wanted more out of the planning process. So we were really lucky that our transit agency signed on, our MPO signed on to taking this approach to our coordinated plan update. We really emphasized that this was going to get stories directly from people who are going to use this service and humanize the work. And I think that was important. And again, dive into those underlying motivations and those real needs that people have when it comes to transportation so we can start to address the behavioral changes mm-hmm. and just the additional needs that people have. Mm-hmm. So I'll say our coordinated plan was funded totally through our existing UPWP funding for the MPO. This was not an additional grant that came in. We funded it through our usual federal dollars.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I want to go back to something you said earlier. You said people say you did only 20 interviews. Mm-hmm. I did semi-structured interviews for my dissertation. So I know that 20 interviews is like reams of data right? So that's actually, to me, that's a lot. I'm like, that's a lot. But I also get why people say, oh, you only talked to 20 people out of X, right? Yeah. So how does this scale? How does it replicate? Not only for you, but if Chicago was looking to do this, like how many people do you have to interview? What does it look like? I mean, what would your advice, your insights be for both what this looks like next for you all and then how other municipalities might adapt this approach?
Yeah, I think it comes down to after you've done a couple of interviews, taking stock of where you are in your data collection efforts. And you do reach a point where you start to hear similar themes through every interview that you do.
Right.
And you just kind of intuitively get to a point where you're like, okay, this is diminishing returns and we're not going to get a whole lot else out of talking to more people.
Sure.
But that's the really difficult part, I think, of the data collection for this is that there is no formula you can say, you know, like a statistically significant population or sample size. You have to kind of build that flexibility into your scope of work. So we actually did not say how many people we were going to interview when we put the scope together.
Okay, interesting.
We just said, we know that we've got these groups of people that we want to speak to. We want seniors, people with disabilities, and we want people with varying levels of experience with the transit agency.
Yeah.
And then a separate group was to speak to employees of human service agencies who are working directly with folks. So we put the call out to our partner organizations and we said, we want to do these interviews. Do you have folks who would want to talk to us about their transportation experiences? Mm-hmm. In part, maybe because we did the entire thing in-house. We did not reach out to a consultant to help us out with this.
Sure.
We had that flexibility after we were about what ended up to be 3/4 of the way through to say, yeah, I think we're at a point now where we've collected enough interviews, we have enough data, and we can move that into the next phase of creating those personas and those needs and objectives.
Great. Mm-hmm. That's helpful.
Yeah. Mike, you also mentioned about a lot of storytelling that had to go in to be able to, you know, really get this to fruition. So talking about storytelling in transportation planning, it seems like it's a very valuable skill. And, you know, as the division board, we do engage a lot with students and emerging planners and are constantly trying to put out content that can be very valuable for them as they step into the industry. So what we were thinking, what are some ways to develop and refine those storytelling abilities and effectively communicate, you know, transportation concepts and projects that can sometimes be very engineering heavy and jargony and, you know, get it across.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we are looking at ways to use the personas that we developed as public outreach, public communications sort of materials.
Great.
So all of these personas are not real people, obviously, but they've got names. We use stock images for them.
Nice.
They've got a very background that we created for them, essentially, based on the people that we talked to, obviously. But one of the planners on my team was really set on deciding that one of the personas was a former basketball coach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was like, this person has a mean hook shot.
I was like,
okay. I don't know if it really matters in the grand scheme of things, but it humanizes and it personalizes.
Right, right.
So getting back to sort of how we use those, I think we can talk about numbers all day, but when we start to say, does Richard, the one person in our persona group, does Richard's story sound like your story or the story of a family member, a friend, a loved one, et cetera? And here's then what we're saying we can do about Richard's needs in the community. And if you've got other ideas, we'd love to hear them. Mm-hmm. And again, partnering with those other funding organizations, we can say, okay, the MPO or the county isn't going to fund your project, but maybe we can go to the United Way, the Community Foundation, some of our other partners to fund whatever project or improvement that you have in mind, because you've got a Richard or an Amelia or an Oscar, and you know their experience and you know what would help them out.
I love the idea of kind of like, this persona is not a right fit for you. Let's find where they do fit. Right. Like that's awesome though. I mean, this has been terrific. This is so interesting and different. And I'm curious, you know, as we close out, what does success look like for you in 5 or 10 years? How do you know the persona's worked or this approach moved things in the direction you wanted them to go?
So I think if people start talking about the personas that we've developed in the way that people have started talking about the Alice population that the United Way has created, which is that happens to be an acronym for asset limited, income constrained, and employed. But they, again, created that Alice name.
Yeah.
And people are, at least in our community, are speaking about the Alice population. They know an Alice. And I think if people start to relate to the personas that we've developed in that way and say, Oscar is just like my neighbor. Oscar's somebody who's 35, who uses a wheelchair and is employed. And that sounds just like my neighbor, Josh. And here's what the Planning Commission, the MPO, and all of your partners are doing to help out Oscar and the Josh, who's a real person. And just being able to share that story in that way.
Wow.
That's incredible.
What a way to put out relatable content, even for the community.
Are the personas online? Can folks explore them at all?
They will be on ycpc.org, which is the County Planning Commission's website. We just adopted the plan and we're waiting on Adams County to adopt the plan shortly. So once we go through that final approval process, it'll be on our website. People can check it out.
Cool. I'll bet by the time this podcast comes out, we will be able to meet those personas. That's fantastic. Thanks, Mike, for your time. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Cool. That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Critical Conversations in Transportation Planning. To learn more, visit the APA's Transportation Planning Division website at transportation.planning.org.
Ready to plan what's next for California's multimodal future? Caltrans is hiring transportation planners now. Start your journey at caltranscareers.com.